across the threshold street, she entered it and found herself amid great figures of God, conscious in thought and living without breath, watching with fixed regard the soul of man, executed figures of the cosmic set, world symbols of immutable prophecy.
We'll do one more. Mm-hmm. We'll do one more. Okay, let's start.
Yeah? We can play with it.
Okay, yeah? Play it along. Yeah. I don't think anybody else should come.
Just stop playing, yeah?
Thank you.
no sound, only the living nearness of the soul, as thus she parts in that mysterious place, through home and home, through door and hall door. She felt herself made one with all she saw, a sealed identity within her look. She knew herself the beloved of the Supreme. These gods and goddesses were he and she, the adorer and adored, self-love and one.
Ones. We're in the book of Yoga and Canto 5, the finding of the soul. It's on page 523, and I think we stopped on line 58. Savitri is finally recognizing the mystic cavern in the sacred hill, where is the dwelling of her secret soul, as if in some Elysian occult depth, truth's last retreat from thought's profaning touch. As if in a rock temple's solitude hid, God's refuge from an ignorant worshipping world, it lay withdrawn even from life's inner sense, receding from the entangled heart's desire, a marvelous brooding twilight met the eyes, and a holy stillness held that voiceless space. An awful dimness wrapped the great rock doors carved in the massive stone of matter's trance. Two golden serpents round the lintel curled, enveloping it with their pure and dreadful strength, looked out with wisdom's deep and luminous eyes. An eagle covered it with wide, conquering wings. Flames of self-lost, immobile reverie. Doves crowded the grey, musing cornices like sculptured postures of white-bosomed peace. Savitri has been asked to search within her body for the dwelling of the soul. And in the last weeks, we've been following her on that journey through several cantos as she passes through layers and layers and layers of the being, deeper in. And now, at last, she's come to a place where she recognizes that this is the entrance. There's a mystic cavern, a cave in the sacred hill. It's a deep inner landscape. And she recognizes that that is the dwelling of her secret soul. And Sri Aurobindo likens it to a rock temple. There are places in India, even here, not so far away near Jinji, there's a rock temple that's carved into the hillside, quite deep in. One passes in, and then there are long corridors, and finally, quite deep in there near Jinji, one comes to a massive stone figure of sleeping Vishnu. But here it is a bit different, but it's a rock temple, and what I read describes the entrance to it. But the feeling, the psychological feeling, is of depth, Elysian occult depth. The Elysian fields are the heavenly fields, the dwelling of the gods, no? So it is like that. There's a feeling of something divine and wonderful, but hidden deep. He says it's the last retreat of truth from the touch of thought. It's very, very deep in. Our mind cannot reach that place. This is, he says, as if God's refuge, a place where he goes away to hide from the ignorant, worshipping world. It's lying there, withdrawn, deep within, away even from the innermost sense of life, let alone the physical senses on the surface. We have deep, inner, subtle senses, but it's beyond even that, leading deep inwards, receding from the desire of the heart, which is so tangled and crooked and complicated. And then comes this description of the entrance to the cave. And Mother and Huta have made a painting of this entrance. It's misty, dim twilight. There's a sense of holy stillness. There's no voice, absolutely silent. And Sri Aurobindo says an awful dimness. He doesn't use the word in the way that we use it in our crude everyday speech. When we say awful, we mean something not good, no? Oh, it was awful. Awful rain today. It doesn't mean that. It means something that inspires awe, the feeling of reverence to something high and divine. So there's a very, very holy, awe-inspiring atmosphere, even surrounding the doors, these great rock doors that have been carved in the massive stone of matter's trance. This is deep inside Savitri's heart, but there, there's this hill and this cave symbolizing the essence of matter. And if we look at things as Sri Aurobindo looks at them, we can say that matter, and perhaps especially rock, very, very dark, dense rock, it is like the densest form of spirit, as if matter is spirit, consciousness, Ananda, in trance, the consciousness withdrawn deep, deep within. So there's this massive stone of the trance of matter. But around the lintel, the lintel is the beam on top of the door, yeah? Around the lintel, there are two golden serpents. Serpents are energies, forces, and often they are negative forces. But these are golden serpents. These are energies, truth energies. They, serpents, are often guarding thresholds, the threshold where we enter in. When Savitri began to enter in to her inner being, there was a great dark serpent that reared up and warned her. So many doors are guarded by guardian energies. These are golden ones. They are enveloping that lintel and protecting it with their pure and dreadful strength. They have eyes that are full of wisdom, wisdom's deep and luminous eyes. And above the serpents, there's an eagle also protecting the door, covering it with wide, conquering wings. And all around, on the edges, the cornices, there are doves, white doves. And they look like, Sri Aurobindo says, they look like flames, but also, again, of some being that is in trance, in self-lost, immobile reverie. They're completely still, as if they are meditating or dreaming. So they look like statues, they look like carvings, like sculptured postures representing peace. And the white bosoms of those beautiful doves suggest peace. Doves always represent a message of peace. Is it clear? Anybody would like to ask anything?
This is just a symbol of the stone. I mean,
this is the entrance.
No, I mean, this actual description of a place and all that. Is it just symbolic?
I think usually what Sri Aurobindo's doing here is a describing deep psychological experiences. So this is Savitri's experience as she goes deep within, looking for her soul. First she came into this darkness of not knowing anything, and then the light came, the dawn, the day, and she recognized the place. And now this is something where she has to go even deeper in. There's a hill, she has to enter into the cave, and go into the very, very, very center of it. So, of course, these are symbolic images, but it's an experience. Experiences, the really deep experiences, often come to us in the form of images, symbolic images.
I see on line 61, this is as if.
Yes. Yeah. So, this is not he's signaling to us that this is not a physical landscape. It's an inner landscape that looks like a rock temple.
So, in for her particular consciousness in seeking a soul, she maybe had this vision of this.
This is where she has to go in. Whoops, I remember somebody else who has described the way of reaching the soul through a tunnel, also a rock tunnel, a long tunnel. So I think this is not only Shobindo's description of the experience, it's an experience of many people who have gone deep inside. The pictures, the precise pictures may be different, but...
This is in fact the psychic discovery that Mother talked about, that we should have to become a source.
Yes.
And if
this is the way to it. This is not yet the discovery.
Yeah, yeah.
This is on the way. Do you like to take a book?
And when you say Savitri is entering into this chamber, or is there a mental consciousness which is flowing?
No, he says we've left the mind far, far away. And the life's desire, she's moved away from all those levels of the being. It is her central being that is.
So the psychic being is what she's discovering. So there's a central being and a psychic being.
Well, we'll see that when we come to it. Just think of this as Savitri's central consciousness, what she's identified with. She's taking with her on this journey. Starting from the outermost, like we would have to do. Starting from our outermost levels, we would have to concentrate and go deep within, and successively deeper levels. But still there's a central consciousness which is taking that journey.
And the serpents are there. What is that they are protecting? They are protecting this consciousness.
They are protecting this entrance to the soul. And they will not allow anybody to pass unless they are pure enough and ready enough.
So for example, the mind cannot go to a certain place, it can stop then.
Yes. But I think we've already left the mind world, no? Okay. Quite far back.
Okay, I'm still with mind.
Yes. We're on page
524.
Yeah, it says truth's last retreat from thought's profaning touch. So the thought can't enter here into this. Yeah. And Margaret, you'll read? Yeah.
Across the threshold, she entered in and found herself amid great figures of God, conscious and strong and living without breath, watching to stick to God. The soul of man, the significant figure of the cosmic sound, were symbols of immutable potency, and the walls covered with significant shapes looked at the life scene of men and beasts, and the high meaning of the life of God. The power and necessity of this numberless world and phases of being and stretches of world space spoke the
succinct
and inexhaustible hieratic message of the knighted flame.
Thank you. What I have understood from the mother, things that she's told us, is that if we go into a deeper or higher state, there's a moment of transition, which is something like a sleep from a certain state of consciousness. It's as if we fall asleep a moment and we wake up into another state of consciousness. And this can be done successively, many times. She said she could do it 12 times to different planes of existence. So here it is as if when she enters the, crosses over the threshold into the temple, It's like there's a moment of sleep across the thresholds, sleep she entered in. And when we enter into a rock temple, we may find great carved figures of gods there. But these are not just material figures in ordinary matter. They are consciousnesses. These conscious figures are there. They are alive, although they are not breathing. And those figures are watching, seeing the whole soul of man entering in. And he says these are executive figures of the cosmic self. An executive is somebody who works out what has been decided by the governing board or the directors. No? So these gods, they are carrying out the will of the cosmic self, of the universal self. And they are symbols, world symbols of immutable potency. They don't change. Their power doesn't change. They represent unchanging cosmic powers. So there are these figures of gods, and then on the walls there are also significant shapes, such as we might see on the walls of a shrine, a sacred place. And these significant shapes are illustrating the life scene of man and beast and their meaning, the high meaning of the life of gods. If one knows how to read these images, they tell about the power and the necessity of all these many, many worlds, all the many worlds and kingdoms on the different planes of existence. There are faces of being, and there are also spaces, stretches of world space. And all these are speaking, they are telling something. They are telling the message of the climbing planes, which Asvapati climbed in book 2, starting from matter to the subtle physical level, the life, several life levels, the mind levels, the world of soul, the world of the higher knowledge. So there are all these many, many planes of conscious existence which have a meaning. They are not accidental. They have a message. And the story of that message is told there on the walls at the entrance to this cave. So entering in, Savitri sees all these things and is reminded of all these great significances. So the succinct and inexhaustible hieratic message. Succinct means it's told very briefly, in a very in a picture. But the meaning is inexhaustible. The meaning of this hieratic message. We can say hieratic means that it is secret. The meaning is not obvious, or you have to have some initiation before you can understand the message fully. Sorry, yes.
Watching with this fixed regard the soul of man. So this says that all of our souls are one soul.
All of our souls belong to one soul, yes. We are sub-souls of one soul. Or all the souls are one.
Yeah.
Savitri is representing humanity. But those gods are always there watching.
But Aristotle's a heart.
I think this is part of the hieratic message, Audrey. That really our souls. No, I can't say it. Sri Aurobindo says it very, very clearly somewhere. He says we shouldn't be misled by the illusion of size or of quantity within our truest inner being. Each of us carries all the divine. We think it's potential and all that. So this is something the mind can't grasp really. Savitri will experience this identity. It's almost the next thing that comes, this oneness. And that's what we can all experience if we come to this place. Sorry, hang on.
If there is immense truth, finding infinity, there is the extension of the self of God, and chaos, impassively receiving all, his figures and his small and mighty acts, and his passion and his birth, and life and death, and his return to immortality. To be abiding and eternal is their plan. With a pure existence everywhere the same. With the sheer consciousness of the absolute force and the unimaginable and formless bliss. With the merge in time and the timeless mystery of the triune being who is all in one and yet is no one but himself apart.
Yes, thank you. In line 89 it says, in their immensitude, and then they in the next line. We might wonder, who is this they? I'm wondering if it is the plains. It speaks about the hieratic message of the climbing plains. And it's in their immensitude, the vastness of these plains, perhaps. They are signing, they are indicating infinity. Each of these planes is an extension of the self of God, and they are providing homes for all his figures, God's figures, his small and mighty acts and his experiences, his passion, and his birth and life and death in human form, and his return to immortality. So this part of this message, this secret message, is about the journey of the soul. And these planes, they climb up to what is abiding, permanent and eternal. They're climbing up to the pure existence which doesn't change, which is everywhere the same. To the sheer consciousness and the absolute force and the unimaginable and formless bliss. It's the Satchidananda is there. And the experience they're leading up to is the mirth in time. Mirth is merriment, happiness, enjoyment in time. And the timeless mystery. There's an experience which, in which these are combined in that triune being who is all and one, Satchitananda. And yet at the same time, he is no one but himself, apart, not limited by anything in the manifestation. Anybody would like to share anything?
The climbing planes are going, there are several, and then at the end it goes to the triumph view, and that is the timeless wisdom.
There's a kind of borderline. You might remember there's a painting of Hutas which shows all these different planes rising up from the inconscient to the physical, the vital, the levels of mind, over mind, and then there are four levels of ananda and tapas and consciousness and pure existence. And then there's a kind of borderline. And Mother explained that human beings who've reached that borderline, they have the feeling that beyond it is empty. There's nothing there, it's apart. But she said that is not the fact really. That is the world of truth. It's packed with potentiality, all different possibilities. So the climbing planes, that's what they're reaching up to. The highest that we can, or that the sages have been able to formulate, they call it Satchitananda, pure existence, consciousness, tapas, and bliss. And beyond that, they say, we can't say anything about it. It's the ineffable. It's the transcendent, the one. And yet because we have come, because our souls are aspects or portions or expressions of that one, we can, in a way, ourselves unite with the transcendent and know the transcendent.
So the extensions that are mentioned, the planes,
they are extensions of the self, of the one.
So could we equate the extensions to like prakriti of nature versus the self as the purusha?
I think we can say that the prakriti aspect and the purusha aspect are present on all the planes. The planes of existence are these planes which are gradually emerging in the course of evolution. So we think of matter, the inconscient being the lowest plane, and then the life plane, the mind plane, and there's more than one mind plane. Above those is the overmind plane. And above those, it's as if the qualities of ananda and tapas and consciousness and of chit and sat, each of them has a plane where they dominate. His mother has shown four different planes there. Does that answer your question?
Yes. So at each plane there is this aspect of purusha prakriti, but each plane is an extension.
Yes. Or we can say throughout the whole manifestation, the conscious spirit is there, and then the active dynamic nature is there. And they take different poises on different levels and in different actions of themselves. And as we go through Savitri, we see, depending on what plane we are, he shows us what the spirit is like and what nature is like on that plane. So here this is all very succinct. Here this is put briefly summarized. But Savitri, as she's entering in, it's as if all this knowledge, all these experiences are coming to her in a very living way as she passes through this rock temple.
So it's like good that he reached to the plane, yes? That borderline.
We can understand it like that, yes. Yes, or that he didn't. There was that he didn't want to say anything, that to say anything about what lay beyond would falsify it. So he didn't want to say anything about that state of nirvana. Sri Aurobindo has equated, or he's used that word nirvana, for his own experience of the silent Brahman. And Brahman is the word for everything. So he said it has a silent aspect. But if we wait until our being, our consciousness can adjust, then we can have the experience also of the dynamic Brahman, the divine presence in everything, acting and loving and being in everything. So, shall we go on?
And yet, is no one but himself apart? And I thought that I read this himself apart, but it's not that, is it?
Maybe it is. There's this triune being, this is Satchit Ananda, who is everything and one, and yet is also transcendent, is no one but himself apart. He's not limited by his manifestation. He's beyond the universe. He's in, he's all this, but he's also beyond and free of it. Its words cannot explain this.
Oh, so it's just what you were talking about?
Yes, yeah, I think so. Yeah. So let's read on. I think if we let Sri Aurobindo's words sink into us, read and reread, these things will become clearer to us than if I struggle to explain things.
Your explanation helps in appreciating.
Well, that's why I struggle. Yes. Will you read, Audrey?
There was no step of breathing then, no sound, only the living nearness of the soul. Yet all the world and God Himself were there. So every symbol was a reality and brought the presence which had given its life. And all this she saw, and inly felt and knew, not by some thought of mine, but self, a light not born of sun or moon or fire, a light that dwelt within and saw within, shedding an intimate visibility, made secrecy more revealing than the word. Our sight and sense are infallible gaze and touch, and only the spirit's vision is wholly true.
Thank you. Anybody would like to ask anything?
Not by some thought of mind, but by the self.
Yes.
So how do you know something not by the mind, but by the self?
He says it a little later on. He says the spirit's vision. So each of us have the capacity of not only seeing physically, but also seeing subtly, and even more deeply than the subtle seeing, there's the spirit's vision. So that's how you were asking, what part of her? I suppose we can say it's her spiritual being, which is having these experiences, this experience. And I was thinking about this word symbol. We know Sri Aurobindo's symbol, and we know Mother's symbol, and there are so many other symbols in the world. But in our surface consciousness, we just see it as a sign for something. We don't experience normally what that symbol is signifying, what it stands for. But here, what Savitri is having the experience now, as she comes into this deep, deep level of herself, all these figures of gods and the figures on the walls and all this, she can feel the reality which it signifies. Every symbol was a reality. So all the worlds and God himself, she's experiencing all that. No? There's a presence, there's a divine presence which gives life to all these things. So she saw all this, and at the same time, inly, deep within herself, she felt and knew just this line which you asked about. Not, she doesn't know by the way that we know things, by some thought of mind, but by a direct experience from her deepest self. And there's a light of consciousness. This is not a consciousness that comes from the sun or the moon or fire. It's a light that lives within. It's the light of the spirit and that sees within. So that, he says, that light gives an intimate visibility. It's not just seeing, it's experiencing. It feels very, very close and intimate. So all these secret things that are there are made more revealing than the word. I'm struggling to speak the word, and Sri Aurobindo is using the word. But when we hear the word and see the symbol with our spirit's vision, then we know. That's knowledge with a capital K. Our sight and sense are fallible. They don't give us the whole story. Only the spirit's vision is wholly true. We'll go on. Yeah.
As thus she passed in that mysterious place, through room and room, through door and rock even door, she felt herself made one with all she thought, a sealed identity within her work. She knew herself the beloved of the Supreme. These gods and goddesses were he and she. The mother was she of beauty and delight. The world in Brahma's vast creating craft. The world fusions on almighty Shiva's lap. The master and the mother of all life. Watching the worlds their twin regards had made. And Krishna and Radha forever entwined in bliss. The adorer and the adored, self lost and one.
Thank you. So this, as she moves further, this sense of oneness wakes up in her. She can identify with all these figures that she sees. She knows that this is her own story. She knew herself. She feels that she is the beloved of the Supreme. And all these gods and goddesses, they are he and she. And so she experiences herself as the mother of beauty and delight. The word in Brahma's vast creating clasp. She is Savitri. She's actually the Shakti of Brahma, the creator. She's his creative, dynamic creative power. Also she experiences him in union. She experiences herself as the world power seated on Shiva's lap. We see such wonderful bronzes of this union of Shiva and Shakti. These are images, but they're images of a very great truth. So they are all images of what you were saying, the two aspects, the master and the mother of all lives, united and watching all these worlds that they have created together. They've created by their vision. Regard here means their look, their gaze. And then there's another relationship, the relationship of Krishna and Radha. The adorer is Radha, and Krishna is the adored, the beloved. But they are always self-lost and one in their union. That is what comes in the picture which Mother and Huta have made. Is it clear? It means hew. To hew means to cut. So this temple, this shrine, has been cut out of rock. So the doors which she passes through, they've been carved, cut in the rock. So it, this is going deeper and deeper. There's room after room, doorway after doorway, cut in this rock, this stone, the massive stone of matter's trance.
So the line 120, the gods and goddesses were he and she. So I would have respected the god and goddesses in small letter and he and she in capital.
Sorry, this is the way he seems to have written it. Patty, you'll go on.
In the last chamber on the Bodhi seat, one sat whose shape no vision could define. Only one felt the world's unattainable fount. A power of which she was a straying forth, an invisible beauty, goal of the world's desire. A sun of which all knowledge is a beam, a greatness without whom no life could be. Thence all departed into silent self, and all became formless and pure and bare.
Thank you. So there are these forms of the two in one, but beyond them, in the last chamber, there's the one who is, stands behind that division into two, or that projection into two. One sat. That one has a shape, but the vision can't define it. It's not possible to fix that shape and perceive what it is. Only one felt, she felt, Savitri felt, that this one is the fount, the origin of the world. And she's, that fount, that origin is unattainable. This is, this cannot be reached. And yet she feels that she herself is a force of that original power, a power of which she was a straying force. She's moving around, wandering about, but she is a force of that original power. That unattainable fount is the power. It's also an invisible beauty. This is a paradoxical thing, no? A beauty which can't be seen, an ultimate beauty which doesn't need to be, whose shape no vision could define. But that's the beauty that we are all longing to see. That is the goal of the world's desire. That one is also a sun, a vast glowing sun of all knowledge. And all knowledge, all other lights are just beams of that sun. And it's also the greatness without which life, no life could be. It's the source, it's of everything. But there's even a beyond to that. Thence, from there, everything went further on into silent self. So maybe this is crossing that borderline or so that we spoke of. And in the silent self, all became formless and pure and bare, without qualities, beyond qualities. But she can go even further. You like to read now?
Then through the pure tunnel dug in the last rock, she came out where there shone a deathless sun. A house was there, all made of flame and light, and crossing a wall of doorless living power, there suddenly she met her secret soul.
Yes. We'll pause there before going on. This is the moment. The finding. We'll just look at what you read and then we'll go on further. Yeah. Everything's formless and pure and bare without qualities, but there's still a tunnel dug in the last rock. There's another further way to go. And she passes through that tunnel and comes out into a space where there's this deathless sun shining. And there seems to be a house, something defined, all made of flame and light. It's a sun house. And she crosses through this wall. There's no door, she has to pass through this wall of fire. There, suddenly, she met her secret soul.
So, the deeper one is the golden throne, the sun, and the other one is the deathless sun. This one, what?
I can't say anything about it, Sudanya. You'll have to get your own illumination. There's now a whole section explaining about the relationship between the secret soul and the individual soul that's with us in our life experience. So there isn't time to read that sentence by sentence and explain it, but we can read it. Yes? Chinhee would like to start.
Our being stood immortal in transience, that is, dwelling with the woman within, in whose wide eyes of tranquil happiness, its pity and sorrow could not evaluate. Infinity turned its gaze on infinite shape. Observer of the silent steps of the hours, eternity upheld the minutes past, and the passing scenes of the everlasting play.
Thank you. Would you like to read, sir?
Yeah. In the mystery of its selecting wall.
Will.
Of selecting will, sorry. In the divine comedy, participant, the spirit's conscious representative, God's delegate in our humanity, comrade of the universe, the transcendence ray. She had come into the mortal's body's room to play at a
ball.
With time and circumstance, a joy in the world, a master movement here, the passion of the game lighted her eyes. A smile on her lips welcomed Earth's bliss and grief. A laugh was a return in pleasure, a return to pleasure and pain.
Thank you. You'll read, sir.
All things she saw as a masquerade of truth, disguised in the costumes of ignorance, crossing barriers to immortality. All she could front with the strong spirit's peace. But since she knows the toil of mind and life, as a mother feels and shares her children's lives, she puts forth a small portion of herself, a being no bigger than the thumb of man, into a hidden region of the heart, to face the pain and to forget the bliss, to share the suffering and endure earth's wounds, and labor meet the labor of the stars.
Thank you. Ursula? No. You will read?
This in us loves and weeps, suffers the stroke, exults in victory, struggles for the crown, identifies with the mind and body and life, it takes on itself their anguish and defeat, bleeds with fate, weeps and hangs upon the cross, yet is the unwounded and immortal self, supporting the actor in the human scene.
Yes, thank you. Mom, you will read? Yes.
Through this, she sends us her glory and her powers, pushes to wisdom's heights, to misery's deep gulfs. She gives us strength to do our daily tasks, and sympathy that partakes of others' grief, and the little strength we have to help our race. We who must fill the role of the universe, acting itself out in a slight human shape, and on our shoulders carry the struggling world. This is in us, the Godhead small and marred, in this human portion of divinity. She seeds the greatness of the soul in time to uplift from light to light, from power to power, till on a heavenly peak it stands, a king.
Thank you. Sultania.
In body, with in its power and invisible might, it climbs trembling, heard up by an unseen hand, a toiling spirit in a mortal shape, hearing this chamber of pain and light in it. They look upon each other, knew themselves, the sacred deity and its human part, the calm, immortal, and the struggling soul. Then with a magic transformation speed, they rushed into each other and grew one.
Mm. Thank you. So we can close by listening to the mother reading some passages from what we have read this morning.
Onward she passed, seeking the soul's mystic cave. At first she stepped into a night of God, the face of dawn out of moon's twilight gold. Day came, priest of a sacrifice of joy, into the worshipping silence of her world. He carried a mortal luster as his robe, trailed heaven like a purple scarf, and wore as his vermilion calf mark a red sun. An awful dimness wrapped the great rock door, carved in the massive stone of matter's trunk. Two golden serpents round the lintel curl, enveloping it with their pure and dreadful strength, looked out with wisdom's deep and luminous eyes. An eagle covered it with wide conquering wings. Flames of self-lost, immobile reverie, those crowded the grey musing cornices like sculptured postures of white bosomed peace. Across the threshold sleep, she entered in and found herself amid great figures of God, conscious in stone and living without breath, watching with fixed regard the soul of man, executive figure of the cosmic set, world symbol of immutable potency. Thank you. world, no step of breathing men, no sound, only the living nearness of the soul, as thus she passed in that mysterious place, through home and home, through door and hall door. She felt herself made one with all she saw, a sealed identity within her walk. She knew herself the beloved of the Supreme. These gods and goddesses were he and she, the adorer and adored, self-lost and one. Chamber on a golden seat, one sat whose shape no vision could define. Only one felt the world's unattainable fount, a power of which she was a straying force. An invisible beauty, goal of the world's desire, a sun of which all knowledge is being, a greatness without whom no life could be.
Puts forth a small portion
of herself. A being no bigger than the sum of man, into a hidden region of the heart, to face the pang and to forget the bliss, to share the suffering and endure earth's wound and labor mid the labor of the stars. Here, in this chamber of flame and light, they met. They looked upon each other, knew themselves, the secret deity and its human part. The calm immortal and the struggling soul. Then, with a magic transformation speed, they rushed into each other and grew one.
Thanks to Sherbindo.